you wanna find penguins, down you go to the bottom of the earth at the South Pole. Antarctica is the place where you find the most penguins taking up space. Penguins have wings, but they cannot fly. They like to swim and sometimes slide. The most classic thing that they like to model is the way they do their penguin waddle. Moving my flippers up and down. Look at me, I'm a penguin now. An aquatic bird who just can't fly. You won't find me up in the sky. A penguin fact you don't want to miss. These birds lay eggs, they're oviparous. The egg stays warm on daddy's feet while the mommy swims and finds food to eat. The daddies huddle together to stay warm. They've got to stay close until the babies are born. The egg stays cozy with a pouch of skin. Keeping it warm, that's incubation. Moving my flippers up and down. Look at me, I'm a penguin now. An aquatic bird who just can't fly. You won't find me up in the sky. When it comes to food, penguins get their fill. They like to eat fish, they like to eat krill. But the baby needs the mommy to go into the ocean to find some food below. She brings it back to feed the chick. Now check out this other disgusting trick. The strangest of all food presentations. She can feed her chick through regurgitation. Moving my flippers up and down. Look at me, I'm a penguin now. An aquatic bird who just can't fly. You won't find me up in the sky. Who is the biggest species of them all? The emperor stands about 4 feet tall. And if he doesn't want to become another's meal, he should avoid that leopard seal. One last thought about penguin form. There's one last trick to keep their bodies warm. If you look at their bodies undercover, there's a layer of fat that people call blubber. Moving my flippers up and down. Look at me, I'm a penguin now. An aquatic bird who just can't fly. You won't find me up in the sky.
All right. Luca, I'm not sure what's happening, but I sent you another request to come up. Hope you guys enjoyed the informational penguin bop. Thought it was appropriate for the theme. Let's see if we can get Luca back up here. Twitter Spaces, don't rug us on Pudgy Penguins Day. Oh, no. He has left us again. I wonder if he's in the North Pole or South Pole. What did the song say? Okay, let's try again. Invite to speak. Da, da, na, na. I wish I had another penguin bop. Oh, here we go.
Amazing. No, it was completely breaking on me while I was trying to join, so sorry about that.
I hope you got to hear the penguin bop, though. That thing was, I mean, it's a tune.
I need you to send me the link to that song.
How good is it? Oh, my God.
It's amazing.
Oh, I found that on YouTube, and I was like, yes, perfection. But, yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so excited to have you. You know, your story is pretty incredible, and I'm excited, and I love the project as well. I'm a big fan of the art, so it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me. I'm extremely grateful.
Okay, so the first thing that comes up when you Google your name, I'm sure you've seen this, is the German soccer player. And I'm wondering, do you guys ever get mixed up? Do you ever get DMs? Like, can you come play or do this?
So I actually wanted to be a professional soccer player growing up. I was really good at it. And I've tried to be his friend multiple times. And I'm half German and he's German. And so I have tried to make contact on several occasions, but I think he's just like too cool for me.
That's actually hilarious. I feel like you guys should be friends. You guys need to have a Luca Nets meetup. Like, this needs to happen.
I feel like one day we're going to connect and it's going to be like long lost brothers. I'm really confident.
Yeah, I think what we need to do is get him to buy a Pudgy Penguin. That's what we need to do. I mean, that's the move.
Wow, talk about marketing genius. I've written that down. Mm. That has to happen.
Mm. Thank you. Yes, this is a free advisory session for everybody in here. Please take notes. Also, while you're at it, please retweet out this space so we have more Pudgy Penguin nerds and more members of the community to join. This is going to be an awesome conversation. If you listen to the on-chain interview, this is kind of like a sequel to that. So we're just going to be, you know, expanding on the who is Luca Nets, what's up with Pudgy Penguins, and get some of the team members up here as well, hopefully. And some of you guys, if you want to do a Q&A at the end. Okay. So I watched your podcast on the Simplify podcast. I watched both your episodes for bits of them, not in full. Most of the first one I did, though, which was honestly fantastic. But there is a huge difference just visually, you know, in your tone, in your appearance, your clothing, your style, between the first video and the second. And the first one was March 2020, which is obviously right when pandemic is hitting. And then the next one's December 2020. So towards the end of that. And I was actually wondering, what was the change there? What did you, do you notice that change? Did something happen? You know, you started the second one off with a prayer, which was obviously very different to the first.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm glad that you watched it. So thank you for taking your time for actually watching those. There was a difference right after the Scott podcast, the first one. I thought I was going to die, just put it lightly. And I thought I was really sick and that life kind of flashed before my eyes. And when that had happened, it was a huge realization for me, because what had mattered the day before did not matter the day after. And so it was probably 3 weeks after that podcast with Scott that that had happened. And thankfully, everything is okay. But I had what I would like to think of as a wake-up call. And that had given me a lot of clarity. So in that moment, I thought immediately, like, what matters to me? And I had realized that, you know, life and the fragility of it was real. And the interesting part about it is any one of us could wake up one morning with something we didn't know we had, something that could put our perspective into a different alignment. And having that wake-up call, it's interesting because sometimes I like to take, I wish I'd learned these lessons before God having to slap me in the face and wake me up. But unfortunately, the way that the world works and the way that humans typically work is it takes those type of awakenings to kind of happen for you to gain that clarity. And unfortunately, mine had to happen in a very tough way. And so I had found when that had happened, I like took a huge dive in religion. I read the Torah, I read the Bible, and I read the Quran. And I just wanted to learn more about God and what that meant. And that was kind of the dive I took. And I went from a guy who believed in science and the Big Bang, and not to say that I still don't, because I do, didn't necessarily openly believe and preach that he believed in God, to somebody who now does. And so that was a really, really life-changing moment for me, and period. It was definitely the toughest time in my life, but it only took, you know, 4 or 5 months for me to get to through the other side. And I'm extremely blessed that it wasn't what we thought it was. And so when that happened, that's how you kind of see the transition, because definitely a huge shift. And, you know, beyond that, there was other life experiences, not nearly as bad. But that, if you see the major transition, you know, I was on real polar sides. And maybe when that happened, I was definitely leaned really hard in one direction, and I've kind of stabilized since and found my balance and who I am. But to add some clarity, that is why you see such a big discrepancy.
So do you mind sharing what it was? Like, what happened? You can, obviously, it's fine if you don't.
Yeah, it will come in time. And now I don't think is the right one, but it will be shared one day, and I look forward to.
Yeah, yeah. No, I definitely respect that. You know, it sounds like it was a pretty insane time, and you went through on the other side. And To me, there was just that difference was so apparent watching them. And it was, you know, I loved your demeanor on the second one. Not to say I didn't love it on the first one either, but it was really cool. It felt like somebody grew up almost like 5 years just within such a short span of time. And it seemed like you were really grounded and really found yourself and found like a level of peace that was really nice to see. Because I think it's beautiful when you can see that somebody has sort of achieved something closer to that. And so I love those episodes, and I actually highly recommend everybody in here watch those episodes on the Simplify podcast. They were really good. And I think that it shows a lot about you as well as the other projects that you've worked on before Pudgy Penguins, which are really wildly impressive.
Thank you. And it definitely felt like I matured 5 years. It was like 5 years of like adversity and pain in 5 months. So I love that observation because I definitely feel the same way.
Oh, okay, great. You never know, you know, when you make an observation of someone, how they feel about it. So it's always refreshing when someone receives it well. So I appreciate that as well. Okay, there's been so many little things that I found about you within the last few years that I find to be really quite fascinating. I don't know the whole story here, but what was the trademark battle you had for Call Him Daddy? That was with like Barstool and Dave Portnoy. What was that story? Was that actually happening?
Yes. So I found an opportunity, and my girlfriend was watching the show, and I thought the show was pretty funny. And I was like, well, like Caller Daddy is a great term, but I feel like there should totally be a male version of this exact same thing, but just like talked about like with through men, right?
Yes.
And I was like, you know, because it's like, as a man, I'm not going to lie, like you watch that podcast and it really, you know, gives some pretty interesting insight as to, you know, some of the conversations that may be had, you know, because I'm not a woman. So, I don't have those, you know, woman to woman conversations. So, and I was like, you know, this is interesting because it kind of like sounds like how boys talk a little bit. And I was like, I feel like a lot of men watch that show to get some insight and like maybe how to talk to girls or however that may be. And so I was like, there totally needs to be a male version of this. And why not just call it Call Him Daddy? So I filed for the trademark. We pursued it. And then Portnoy sent me a letter and basically said, like, look, if you go down this road, it's not going to be a good road for you. And I was like, oh, man. So I talked to my lawyer at the time, and my lawyer's a pit bull, and I was like, look, are we going to go to war? And, you know, unfortunately, the way the legal system works, it's whoever has the most money wins. And unfortunately, I don't have the Dave Portnoy bankroll, so we folded.
Oh, my God. I would have loved to see. First of all, that show is a great idea, but I would have loved to have seen you guys, like, just keep going at it and then see some sort of Dave Portnoy press conferences about this shit, scroll through my feed, stumble upon one of his live videos all about the Call Him Daddy trademark war. Man, that's a cool story. I love that. I've seen a few episodes of Caller Daddy, but I didn't realize it was a Barstool thing. Did they sell to Spotify, or is the Spotify deal, do you know, with Barstool included?
So I don't think there were a Barstool thing in the beginning, and then they acquired it. They like worked out some sort of deal. And then I think Portnoy from there was just like, you know, what's the next level here? Take it to Spotify.
Got it. The podcast that you recorded, Netscast or Free Game, I think you may have rebranded at one point. Yeah, that when you recorded that studio, was that the Barstool studio? It's very similar to theirs.
Yeah, so it's a studio that a lot of people use, and it's ran by a guy named Abby. It's called Melrose Podcasts. Mm. Highly recommend. It's like a plug and play. Their whole business model is like plug and play podcast, which I think is an amazing business model. And they were I was fortunate enough to be able to use that space and do it. So it is a lot of podcasts are filmed in that room.
Oh, okay. I recognize that space from so many clips, and a lot of them are Barstool ones. So I was, yeah, that makes sense. Are you ever going to bring back Nets Game or Netscast or Free Game?
Yeah, I would love to. You know, one of the huge initiatives for Pudgy is I think, you know, there's an interesting opportunity to become like a media company and curate this content. And I would love to be a segment and a part of that. over the years, I've found that I've been able to really impact people through these podcasts. And, you know, I've learned a lot. I've suffered a lot. And typically, you know, kind of how I learned not really finishing high school, like I learned off of other people's experiences. And so I find them to be like a huge resource for people to expand their horizon. So I totally plan on it. For me, it's just, and I told, it's interesting you bring that up because I told the team, I you know, somebody had mentioned it like 2 days ago. And I was like, yeah, I'll totally do it, but it has to be a plug and play system. Like what I'm not going to do is like run around with like, you know, a mic and a setup. Like I've got to come into a room, you know, 2-3 times a week and I'll have my guests and I'll do it. But I'm not going to do the whole like running around with my setup. And, you know, so it's just about the office space we have is fairly large. So it's just, we're building it out right now. And when it's probably built and finished, there'll be a room for that.
It's funny you're talking about like the running around. I mean, I would never do that. I have my studio here and either I do that or Zoom. But the when you're talking about Call Him Daddy as well, I was thinking about the Full Send podcast, which obviously, you know, is happening now. And that's kind of like a Call Him Daddy, if you will, because it's very, I guess, Full Sendy. I don't know how else to explain it. But they do a lot of that. I always notice that they're always running around. They're always filming in different locations and bringing setups, I mean, to different states. And that's just a mess. That's so hard to coordinate.
So hard to coordinate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyways, I do hope you guys bring it back. And I think that there is a unique opportunity for media in this space, especially curated media. There's a lot of junk out there. So I like that part. What major factors would you consider when curating the media?
It just has to be in line with like who we are as a company. And I definitely don't want to be like, I'm conscious that some people don't really resonate with our mission. And that's fine. And I definitely want to have complex conversations and, you know, things that not are necessarily all about mental health and positivity. I think to really expand your horizon and hit, you know, every group of people, that you have to have something that isn't just about the same thing every single time. As long as it's not just like, you know, sexist or misogynist, like, you know, like just as long as it's like in line and they're not talking about like controversial stuff, I'd probably have to take the Spotify approach on that. You know, it would just have to be in line with our brand, and there wouldn't be like, to be frank, like a Caller Daddy probably wouldn't fit the bill. It's just not a, even though I think it's a phenomenal podcast, it just wouldn't be in line with what we're doing. But definitely not, you know, a place that is just all about 100%, you know, what we want to do. Like I definitely am conscious of bringing a bunch of people in to, you know, a bunch of different groups of people. And some people, you know, are like, you know, this stance is too soft, or, and that's fine. We can agree to disagree. And so I'm not about like subjugating it to like one specific area. I think it's just important, like people have a place where they can learn and they can expand their horizons. Like I said, it's so important. And I would pick, you know, podcasts and some of these recordings over classes at any Ivy League any day of the week. I don't even think it's close. And so, yeah, I actually spoke to somebody when I was in high school. There was this guy that I know, and he's a very big hedge fund guy. And he was like, Luca, you can, the number one, there's two things that college will give you that are really impactful. One, the people that you meet and the experience. And two, it's the speeches and the people that come and, you know, tell their story to the class, you know, every quarter, every month, whatever it may be. And he was like, one of those is available on YouTube. And he was like, and he also told me, he was like, if you're not going to a top school, then I almost find it redundant. And I was like, that resonated with me. I was like, okay, I'm not going to go down this avenue.
Yeah. Wow. 100%. I heard you talk about that, how you, when you dropped out, you obviously wanted to still get educated. So you were watching a lot of the college speeches and things like that, which is, I mean, so genius. A lot of the information, it's already out there. We have the internet. We have so much at our fingertips. So, you know, the way that you guys will be able to impact the most change, and I know you've spoken about this before when you started your discords and stuff, you can't help 500 people individually, but you can all at once. And so a media company like this, you can help so many different people all at once. And I think that that's fantastic. And, you know, no one wants to just talk about NFTs all day, every day, right? Like you can't just be that. And so I think by keeping everything varied, you're going to keep stuff fresh. then people will gravitate to that. Everyone wants to learn, especially this crew. My God, is there anyone that's more into figuring out how to further their success than this group? I don't know, you know, than the D-gens.
That's a great observation. And I agree with that. You know, Web3, if you were to quantify it into like one adjective or one trait that a lot of these guys are looking to pursue, it's really just learning. You know, like you're coming into something that's so unique and so new, and every day is a learning process. And I love that observation. Thank you for that.
Oh yeah, it's true. It's because it's also so new. So it's that it's got that vibe. Like we all got to figure it out. So we're constantly trying to figure it out. Yeah, that's cool. Are you in Miami right now? Do you live there?
I am in Miami. So I have two homes, one in Los Angeles and one in Miami, and I migrate back and forth.
Okay. And now the safe that you found under the floorboards in Miami, have you gotten in there? Like what's in them?
Yeah. So for people who don't know what she's referencing to, I bought my home in Miami maybe 8 months ago. And while renovating it, we found a safe under the floorboard and we cracked the safe. And I'm so mad, but I basically was watching the guy for 3 hours while he was cracking the safe. I go to get my food, my Uber Eats.
No.
And when when I come, the safe is already cracked open. So I'm like pissed. I'm like, dude, no way. Like I almost wanted to pat him down. But what I did was I looked at the dust particles, right? So I opened the safe and I wanted to see if there was any outlines where something may have sat. And so I concluded that there wasn't, though who knows. but I would assume that because there was no outline of where the dust particles sat, that there was nothing in there. And the conclusion was nothing existed in there.
That is some CSI level detecting. We appreciate that.
Yeah. And I was really hopeful because Miami with the whole, you know, cocaine cowboys and stuff like that. I was like super stoked. I was like, dude, hopefully I just paid for my house for what's in the safe.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, a drug lord had his house, like some freaking Russian gangster, like some Cuban gangster. I didn't even know they had his house. They put their stashes of cash in there. There's like bricks. There must be jewelry, maybe like gold bars. I thought gold bars would be something that might be in there. I'm sad. Were there any cool documents or anything like that?
There is absolutely nothing but dust and like one piece of a diamond earring. But like, it wasn't like any like jumbo diamond by any means. So it wasn't even worth my time, like inspecting and pawning. I think I just like put it somewhere and haven't seen it since.
Man, I'd love to find the owner of that earring. That would be a great story.
Yeah. And the beauty of it was actually in my master bedroom and it had a his and hers closet and a wall in the middle. And so I was like, okay, like I don't need a his and hers closet. I'd rather have one giant closet. So we knocked the wall down and the safe was under the floorboard where the wall was.
Oh.
So it wasn't even like, oh, like, you know, it was accessible. It was like probably hadn't been touched for decades. And so that's why I was really optimistic. I was like, no way. I knocked this wall down. Underneath this wall, underneath the floorboard is a safe. There's got to be treasure.
Honestly, that's crazy. That is from so long ago. It must have been there. Man, I wish. I don't even care if there was treasure. I would have loved to have seen like photos or documents or something cool from that time, like a cigar. I don't know, something very just like artifacty, if you will. That would have been so sick. Maybe a diary. Imagine if you found a diary. You could have published that shit.
I'm a big treasure guy, so anything would have been awesome. But the fact that I got dust and half an earring was a little disappointing.
Wait, you said you're a big treasure guy. Can you elaborate on that?
I don't know. I every time I go to the beach or every time I travel, I search for treasure. So I look for like a diamond in the rough almost that will like set me up for life so that I can just move on to my other initiative, which is just like philanthropic initiatives that don't include, you know, working. So every time I go somewhere, you'll see me at the beach. I'm like staring at the rocks, like trying to find some sort of treasure. So that's what I mean when I say that.
Have you ever taken a metal detector and done one of those?
I haven't done one of those. For me, it's like, if God is going to give me a treasure, he's going to give me a treasure. You know, it's not me picking up a metal detector and finding one.
So you just want to be very aware and on alert head in a swivel just in case it appears, you know?
Exactly. I don't want to walk somewhere and be like, because I was negligent of my surroundings, I missed out on life-changing treasure.
Okay, you need to play Survivor, because that's exactly the type of attitude you need to find all the advantages and shit. Like, that's exactly what you need. That we need to take this sound clip and send it to all the Survivor contestants.
I completely agree. I would love to do that.
Mm. Had you watched the show?
I have in the past, and I've also watched, like, The Amazing Race and stuff like that. Actually, one of my business partners won The Amazing Race. I'm familiar with all that.
Okay. Which partner?
His name is Colin. He's my partner, or he's the CEO of Gelblaster. So
what season did he win?
He won the honorary season, actually. He won the season where all of the winners from the previous seasons came to compete. So he won the coup de grace of all the winnings.
Oh, wow. That's a big deal. That's all stars, basically.
Yeah, he basically won the championship.
Nice, you got the belt. We like that. Okay, speaking of championship, so the Island Boys scam, please explain this. Is this genuine or did this not happen? Is this a joke?
No, it's not a joke. It's not a joke. I paid them $1,000 or $1,500. One of the two, $1,000, $1,500. And it was for some paid promotion on their story. You know, my business is, you know, pay somebody, swipe up, convert, et cetera, et cetera. And I pay them right in their peak of their virality and they completely ghosted me. What? So, yeah, I was like, you guys are Island Boys. You guys are about to be Rikers Island Boys.
Oh my God, that's crazy. They are a wild bunch. Who do you think would win in a fight? One of the Island Boys or Hezbollah?
Island Boys. Even though I would be rooting for Hezbollah.
Wow. You're just like gonna turn your back on Hasbi like that?
I'm just a man of math, you know. Hasbulla doesn't stand a chance, but I love him, and I would be rooting for him every step of the way.
Okay, so I know you are a bit of a UFC fan as well. How long have you been into the UFC, into fights?
So I'm just like a big sports guy. Like, I love everything competitive sports. Mm. I've had that nature since, you know, maybe I was 8, 9 years old. I love the concept of winning. I was played on a lot of sports teams growing up. I hated to lose. I love to win. And I love, you know, getting passionate behind certain fighters or, you know, certain athletes and just wanting them to win. So UFC is one of those things where it's just like the ultimate athletic experience. When you look at like top tier athletes, they would fall into the category of probably the most dangerous people alive. I think that's pretty cool. So I definitely watch, contrary to, you know, being about peace, love, and happiness. But I definitely don't mind a UFC fight.
Yeah, they definitely are the most dangerous people alive. Rose is, I don't know, 30 pounds lighter than me, and she could probably rip my head off.
No offense, but without a doubt.
Without a doubt. I would die so quickly. I would just
And I'm 6'8". 210 pounds, and one of those flyweights would eat me for dinner.
Yeah, you know, they really would. I love sports too. I'm such a competitive. I enjoy competition. I can get competitive, but I'm not someone who minds losing per se. I did see that you want to live courtside next season, and I'm just letting you know I would like to live there with you. I would like to put my ring in the hat.
If everything goes according to plan, the entire huddle will be sitting courtside.
Wow, that's very thrilling. Yeah, sports are cool. Do you prefer individual sports versus team sports? Do you have a preference on that?
I probably prefer team sports a little bit more because, you know, the ability to take over and have one person carry the team, I think, is a pretty interesting concept. And it's like everybody has to be firing on all cylinders to win. Though there really isn't a preference. I think I like more just like constant competition, but I don't, you know, I'm not a huge, I don't watch things like golf, though I love to play golf. you know, I like constant action. Just per my age, our attention spans are pretty slim. So you got to keep me entertained. So as long as it's entertaining, we're good to go.
Yeah, I literally just discussed this on the episode I did for my podcast yesterday. I was saying how movies need to be released in clips now. Like, this is, what are they making us sit through this shit, you know? Our retention is just low. so in terms of like the way that you view sports, a lot of the language that you're using seems really relevant to what you do in business and how you're running a company. Do you feel like that correlates, and that's why you maybe are succeeding on the business end as well?
Yeah, completely. I like to look at it, you know, one of the most impactful things as an entrepreneur that I read was Tobias's letter, CEO of Shopify, to the rest of the team, basically the company. Mm. He said, "We are not a family, we are a team." And he went further and said, like, look, like, this is, you know, we're here to win. And it's like, we can't be calling each other family members or bros or whatever it may be, because we have an objective and it's here to win. And we're going to do whatever it takes to win, no matter who it may offend, right? We're here to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to win. And I really love that when he wrote that, because it's like kind of true. Like, you've got to treat this business like you would a sports team, right? Like, mm-hmm. everybody has their own role. Everybody's firing on each cylinder, and together the objective is to win. And you're only going to win if everybody on the team is, you know, doing their job. And when I read that letter they sent to the staff of Shopify, I was like, yes, this resonates with me. And ever since then, I've kind of taken the same standpoint where it's like, you know, when you're starting a company, you have to do what's in the best interest of the business. And the objective is to win, not only for yourself and your partners, but your shareholders and your investors and everyone alike. And so I read that and it resonated with me, and it's going to stick with me until the end of time.
Oh, that's powerful. That, yeah, I completely agree with that. I think it's, you know, something that you also said that I'm thinking about now is the fact that it's interesting in a team sport dynamic when you have one person who takes over and is, you know, winning for the team. And if you translate that into a business side, I mean, you just can't have that. It's, you would be so inefficient, and so you have to lean down and you have to be efficient. Everyone has to be firing on all cylinders. It's really cool. I feel like coaches and really good leaders in the workplace have high similarities, if that makes sense.
I agree. Like, I agree. Good.
Okay. So I want to talk about this post that you put up almost 2 years ago. We're a little bit shy. It's in August. It will be 2 years, where this kid named Lance came to meet you in North Carolina. Now, you said at the time this would be the best decision of his life. Have you kept in touch with Lance? Has it been the best decision of his life?
Ooh, you're holding me accountable. Now, typically, this is an interesting one, because you'd have brought up a lot of people and the answer would be yes. And unfortunately, I let Lance down, and I'll be honest. And I let Lance down because, not that I talk to Lance all the time, and he's in one of my chats, and he's somebody who's very vocal. But it was one of those situations where a lot of times I align myself with people and I can point them in the right direction and it can go. And for Lance, I had to do a little bit more work than I was prepared to do. But it's somebody that I've laid up multiple opportunities for, and he's taken them and he's doing great. And I think if you put him on here, he would say the contrary. He would say, I didn't let him down. I really believe that, because I think he's in a really great spot right now. But typically in situations that has happened in the past, is I've kind of taken kids under my wing, and I have some really amazing testimonials of, you know, some kids coming into my circle and, you know, going from, you know, couple hundred bucks to multimillionaire. And so when I say I let him down, is that's what I envisioned for him. But unfortunately the timing just wasn't right. And so I don't know exactly what happened. He also wasn't in my area, right? And a lot of these guys that I was able to take under my wing were in the same geographical location as me. Though I know he's doing well, and if you were to put him on the stage, he might give you an opposite answer. But as to my standard of what it is to change somebody's life, I did not.
That was an interesting answer. I'm glad you answered that truthfully. And it's interesting how you are harsher on yourself than you believe that he would be on you. I know your personality type in that test is an architect, And I always kind of assumed that that was more in regards to business, but hearing you speak now, I also kind of see that in the way that you're trying to almost like architect somebody's success to be able to help them to be able to live up to that expectation. It sounds like, I don't know too much about the personality types, but that did just pop into my mind when you were speaking like that.
Yeah, definitely. You have to be your number one critic, right? You just have to be. And one thing I really have developed over time is just living in the real world. Like, I'm really honest with myself. What you'll find is some people will lie to themselves and then believe their lie and then lose track of consciousness and become unconscious to like living in this unreal world, which I did for a long time. Like, growing up, I used to lie to everyone and say I was rich because I was ashamed of how poor we were. And then eventually I started thinking that I was actually rich. Like, I'm beginning to believe my own lie. I think one of the most important things that people can tell themselves is, you know, just be honest with yourself above all else, right? You can portray whatever you might want to, but it's like, give you an example. When we were kids, I kind of grew up in a rough upbringing. So, you know, I was in graffiti crews and like skate crews, and we did bad shit, not stuff that I'm proud of, but that's clearly in the past. And it was one of those things where, like, we would tell each other, like, yo, we're making moves today, right? That would be like the phrase, like, yeah, we're going to go make moves. And what we did when we were making moves, we would all congregate in a huddle, no pun intended, and just smoke weed. And that would be, and then we'd leave the day like, oh, we made so much moves today. And I was like, and then like we lied to ourselves, right? Like, you know, we weren't making moves. We were sitting around on a couch, smoking weed, talking and brainstorming about stuff. That's not making moves, right? And so it was just one of those things where I had to become self-aware, because if I didn't, I would just, you know, live in this lie and spiral out of control. And thankfully, I nipped that in the bud pretty quick, pretty fast once I observed it.
Yeah. That's something that's very hard, self-awareness, right? Self-awareness, actual self-awareness, understanding what you are doing is hard. It's not an easy thing to do. It's something that you really have to work on over the years. So I'm glad that you have a lot of that now. But it's funny, when you're talking about teenage years, I also used to do that shit too. I was delusional. Yeah. Where are we all?
And it's like the addict mentality. Like, a lot of addicts don't believe they're addicts. Right? Mm-hmm. Knowing it is 90% of the problem, right? Being conscious of it and then working towards a solution. A lot of people just don't admit to themselves that they have a problem, whatever problem that may be. So, you know, I know where my problems lie even today. Nobody's perfect, and I have a plethora of problems, and so does everybody else. It's just self-identifying them and, you know, making sure that like you work towards it every day. And every time you encounter these problems, you have a system in place, you know, mind being breathing and putting the phone down for 10 minutes if I get frustrated, and not taking that out on other people. So it's just one of those, you just have to be self-aware and conscious at all time. Consciousness is the key. And I keep saying it, and this might sound a little redundant, but you know, the world is separated in two parts, unconscious people and conscious people. And if you bundle them up and put them in two groups and you visually saw the unconscious versus the conscious, there would be a real clear discrepancy as to what the two people look like. And so I really value myself and have been working for many years on living a conscious lifestyle.
I like that distinction, conscious and unconscious people. It's fascinating. It's true. You know, it's true. You really have to sort of tune into yourself, tune into what's happening, tune into the world. Some people get, I don't know, but it can be difficult. Some people can be lying to themselves for so long, like you were talking about, where you start to believe it yourself. When you've done that for so many years, decades, it's like compounding, and it becomes so much harder to break out of. But it is important. How do you feel like that impacts business then? How would you say that that benefits you in the way that you make moves in business? Because I feel like that's such a huge factor.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it just really separates what's necessary, like what does the business want versus what does the business need, and making the appropriate decisions to feed what the business needs versus maybe what the business wants. And, you know, a business has so many moving parts. you know, being an entrepreneur, I really believe is one of the hardest jobs that anyone can have, because it's a constant, you know, moving vehicle that just, like, there's so many verticals, from HR and how you discuss with the people who work with you, to, you know, putting out fires, to innovating, to problem solving. There's so many verticals to this that it's really hard to say, like, either which way, you know, and consciousness will kind of stabilize you as to what's really going on, right? Like, a lot of unconscious people may see a problem with their employees and make a rash decision, right? But a conscious person will, you know, take their shoes off, put their shoes on, and see where they're coming from, and maybe make a more rational decision. And so there's many examples like this, but you're correct in assuming that, you know, being a conscious entrepreneur and leader versus being an unconscious entrepreneur and leader has two very different outcomes in terms of the nature of the business. Now, some unconscious people still make a lot of money and still have successful businesses, but life is a game of probability. I like to put the stakes and the odds in my favor. You know, nothing is guaranteed, but what you can do is you can make the odds in your favor, and that's really the best that you can do.
Yeah, very Hunger Games of you. May the odds be ever in all of our favors. Absolutely. Have you seen any of the documentaries, the docuseries lately that have come out on the CEOs that have sort of what was the one? It was the WeWork We Crashed, and then there was the Elizabeth Holmes one, and then there was the Uber one, Super Pumped. Have you seen any of those? Because what you're talking about right now kind of feels like what they didn't have. They weren't conscious.
Yeah, I watched the Elizabeth Holmes one and the WeWork one, but I didn't know Uber had one, so that's interesting.
Yeah, the Super Pumped one is really good for Uber. It's pretty – the guy, that Travis guy, is very unhinged, and I don't know how accurate it is, but it's very entertaining. Highly recommend it. But what would you – how do you relate that to what you're talking about now? Because I feel like I see that when I'm watching those shows.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's just unconscious behavior in regards to – it seems very narcissistic. I can't speak on the Travis side, though I will say that I've been watching Travis's story very closely. And when he did Cloud Kitchens, I was like, yo, you're a genius. So he has a really good finger on the pulse. But from observing the situation with Elizabeth and Adam, it just seemed like a very, like, Elizabeth came off very egocentric and was in it for all the wrong reasons. And what I found is that, like, God or the universe, whatever you believe in, the energies that be, for the sake of the conversation, because I don't want to, you know, exclude anybody who may not believe, is that, you know, God or the universe or the energies, whatever they may be, they know that, like, they know your intentions, and they will reward you and punish you accordingly. No matter how much money you make or how that goes, you know, if you're doing it for all the wrong reasons, your fall will come.
Yeah, it's pretty, the stories are pretty crazy. The WeWork one specifically, I agree with you on Elizabeth Holmes. She was very egocentric. Travis, in the show, at least, they portray him to be very narcissistic. I will say that. I don't know how accurate it is, though. Again, like I said, what he did with Cloud Kitchens, agree. When I saw that, I was like, that is a move. He, you know, Uber, quite finger on the pulsey. Cloud Kitchens, incredible timing with everything happening with COVID, just incredible. So I was very impressed with that, and the way that they portray him in the show kind of feels like maybe he's more conscious, but he's just very narcissistic perhaps. But the Adam Newman, he worked very closely with one of my very good friends from Tel Aviv, so I'm calling her next week to get the scoop from her end. She loves him. She's huge. She loves him. She loved working with him, thinks he's a genius. I can't wait to hear her side. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, my only issue with that is, if your company fails, you shouldn't walk out a billionaire, right? Like, that's not a high integrity move. Mm-hmm. I would rather come out, you know, not a billionaire and give the company a shot than pull the liquidity out of the company. You know, it's like a similarity. I think since it's an NFT, and, you know, part of this is about Pudgy, it's like having a mint and then doing a second mint. You know what I mean? Like, right after. And it's like you're pulling all of the liquidity out of your community, almost destining for your project to fail because that $5 million that you banked on the second mint that was going to go, that goes straight into your pocket, would have been the $5 million that would have sustained the floor for X amount of time, giving people a better opportunity to make a profit. And so it just wasn't, I disagreed with how he did that. And I think that was the only issue. He's probably a great guy. But, you know, if your company fails and you lay off your employees, and some people may disagree, and there's probably a good counter argument to that statement, but ethically and morally, I just don't think that's right.
I'm wondering what the counter statement to that would be. I'd be very curious to hear, but
yeah. The argument would probably be, he built the business. The reason those people are hired in the first place are because of him, and he worked his butt off to get there and build that company. So he would probably make that argument, and it would stand pretty well, though I would just harp on the ethicality of it and just say, yeah, sure, but you can walk away with $100 million and still be fine. You don't need $1 billion, right? So I think the amount also matters.
It's interesting what you mentioned about the similarities to Pudgy and what happened there with that project. I'm wondering if the competitor in you was excited about taking over a project that had that level of, I guess, controversy or story, and almost wanting to just revive it, like the underdog story, if you will.
Yeah, I totally feel like I have a chip on my shoulder, but that's fantastic. I perform better when I have a chip on my shoulder, truthfully.
Yeah, I feel that. As the sports fan, and also just the competitor in me, I would also feel that way. I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna rise this little phoenix from the dead. We're gonna make it. We're gonna make it moon. I would definitely feel that way. But I think it's cool too, because an instant rebrand is, you know, awarded to you. You're buying it. You're like a completely new team. You're building out all this stuff. You guys built the igloo. Is that the offices, right?
Yeah, so we had planned to build an igloo at Coachella. That might be what you're... Oh, the igloo is the office. We call it the glue.
Yeah, yeah.
But we did plan to do a igloo at Coachella, but we got screwed last minute for permits, which I didn't assume I needed on private property. But it's been a while since I've thrown an event. But
that would have been sick. You guys definitely need to have an igloo at some point. Speaking of, you guys have a lot of events planned coming up. You have the F1 yacht party. That's going to be really cool. Have all of the tickets been allotted to that already? I know it's pretty soon.
Yeah, they've been allotted. There might be some cancellation, so we definitely will have some backup plans for some people. But as of now, the RSVPs are closed.
Okay. And then you also have an NFT NYC event. Is that one closed or open?
No, that one's yet to be announced, and we are in the process of securing the venue, which is a pretty awesome venue.
Okay, awesome. Fantastic. I'm excited for that. I will be there. I'm not going to be at the F1 thing, but for the yacht party, how did you guys do that? I know it was like a raffle, right?
Yeah, so, you know, unfortunately, per the situation of a boat, there's only a finite amount of people that you can have on a boat before the boat sinks, and the last thing I want to do is create a Titanic-esque situation as we take over Pudgy. Yeah,
the Pudgy boat twice, you know?
Yeah, that we don't need that. And so, you know, in all fairness, it was just a random raffle where people submitted, and it was randomly selected as to who got it and who didn't.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that makes the most amount of sense. Obviously, there's so many limitations on that. You can't really, it's not really much you can do. What about the Pudgy Fest concert? Has that happened, or is that happening?
Yeah, I plan on doing that Q4. And, you know, my experience is when I was younger, I threw a lot of, you know, hip hop shows, and I have a lot of connections in that area, as well as, you know, other areas in music. And so, you know, one thing that I feel like a lot of these events, you know, lack in is, like, when I go to an event, I want to have the time of my life, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to distinguish between a networking event and a fun event. And Pudgy, there probably will be one before that, but that's going to be an event where you come to have the time of your life. And it's not there to network or to mingle. We will have yachts and New York to do that, right? When you come to Pudgy Fest, my motivation and my intent is going to be, you're going to come there and you have the time of your life, like you would at a, you know, like you would if you went to a concert, right? I want people leaving there drenched in sweat, you know, dancing their tail off or their flippers off. And I want them to recap that night and say, that was the most fun I've ever had.
Yeah, hopefully no one fucking remembers. But I love that. I love that mentality. Me and Leah, I don't know if you know Leah Lamar. She's a comedian, also pretty involved in the Web3 space. And we didn't go to Coachella, but we got fucked up at one of our friends' houses instead. Took some psychedelics. It was absolutely incredible. Great night. And we were just talking about how we are always going to these freaking events. Everything is a networking event. Every party becomes a networking event. And it's like never just fun. It's never just a really, really good time. And I think that's something that's missing from this space. Obviously, with the exception, I've definitely been to some really great parties, but just a lot of them are like have this networking ambiance to them. So I love that. I think that's a great idea. Just what we need. Wait, did you say when it was? I didn't hear the date.
We don't know exactly, but it's going to be in December or November or October. It's going to be quarter four.
So, okay, cool. Perfect. Amazing. Amazing, amazing, amazing. That's going to be great. And where can people find out all the updates from this stuff? Do you guys keep everything on one social media? Do you have a medium that they should follow?
Yeah. So when we launch Pudgy Media, all that stuff will be pushed through there. And we'll launch Pudgy Media fairly soon, probably in the next 7 to 10 days. So.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, great. That's perfect timing. That's going to be great. All right. So I want to go back a little bit. I know you talked about your skateboarding days. You got into the sneaker business at one point. Did that stem from the skateboarding culture and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So big skateboarder. I was, skateboarding since I was 8 years old. By the time I was 10, 11, 12, my mom couldn't tie me down. So I was out, downtown LA until 10, 11, PM skateboarding, would take the bus back. Which I think matured me quite quick. So I'm super grateful for the whole skateboarding experience. It was also a great way to relieve stress and a great, place where I could just be free. And the sneaker stuff didn't come because of skateboarding. It really started with Supreme and, flipping stuff for a profit. I was really eager to make money fairly quickly, fairly fast. And the first place I probably made money was sitting in the Supreme line, buying something and selling it to somebody in the line immediately afterwards. And so it just, the sneaker stuff started, and I didn't really like sneakers growing up, maybe because I couldn't afford them. But it was purely an avenue I got into initially, because I wanted to make money. But I will say this, my sneaker collection is pretty massive, and I'd be surprised if there's another NFT CEO or C-level exec with the collection that I've got. So I'll put that one up for the world to hear. If you're an NFT CEO or C-level executive, I'll go toe-to-toe with you on the sneaker collection.
Sneakers are cool. Sneakers are dope. I don't have the craziest sneaker collection, but I would like to at some point. But I don't really care about the rarity, I guess, let's say, of the sneaker. I care if I like it, the look. Like, do I like what it looks like? That's it. But yeah. There's like a whole system. I actually did it for one of my coding bootcamp projects. We made a site called Icebox, and it was like a sneaker database that you could just search all the different features, who's made by, any collaborators. It was pretty cool. Where you could buy it. That was fun.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Were you excited when skateboarding started coming back to life now? Cause it's pretty big. And now also with the Olympics and stuff, it's popping off.
Yeah. It still isn't what it was though. I feel like, I say this because the numbers aren't what they were. Like if you look at Thrasher's, Instagram views, dude, when I was skateboarding, there were a million views a pop, skateboarding has its waves though,
Yeah.
It's like one of those things that catches, and when it catches for 3-4 years, it goes, and then it stagnates, and then it goes, and then it stagnates. And I think we still haven't come back to where it was when I was skateboarding. I think that was really the prime time. And I think the numbers would associate that, but I'd be really interested to hear Thrasher's revenue, and the revenue will show. Maybe this is just my assumption based on what I see, but who knows? I'm not on the back end of any of those, so I wouldn't completely know where skateboarding stands today.
I'm trying to think, because if you were 8 when you were skateboarding, like when you started?
So 13, 14 was when I think it was the prime. So let's say about 10 years ago, 8 to 9 years, 10 to 9 years ago is when I think skateboarding was at its like peak.
When I was, so maybe that was its peak, but when I was young, it was so popular. That was the shit. Like everybody had skate shoes. Nobody even had regular shoes. No guy I knew wore regular shoes to middle school. They all wore skate shoes. Nobody tied their shoes. They just slipped right in. It was so popular.
That's an interesting, yeah, I mean, skateboarding is a foundation of streetwear culture and, you know, what it is to be cool, you know, like it will always have a pillar in the society of cool, you know, like I have a room where like I have a wall full of skate decks in my house. Like I will keep buying it and I'll fill up that wall until I can't anymore. Like they're just cool things, you know?
Did you ever play with those little tech decks, you know, little finger skateboards?
That's the one thing I never got behind. I was never a tech deck guy.
Those were so much fun. I couldn't do the actual thing because I was like a chunky kid and I didn't have balance. So I didn't want to like mess with wheels, but I loved tech decks. They were so much fun.
I love that.
They would keep me in class. It was just something to play with too, which was always because I didn't like having to sit there nonstop. And yeah, that was a good time. So streetwear, I wanted to discuss streetwear a bit because you worked for Von Dutch, right? What did you do for them?
Yeah, it was an interesting story. And Peter, who's in the room, or at least was. So it was midst Chrome Hearts wave. Chrome Hearts was taking off. And Peter and I had an office back in 2019. He was my partner in one of my businesses. And, or our business, it was pretty much our business at that point. And he came to the office with his Von Dutch hat. And I was like, no. He was like, yeah, bro. He's like, you're buying Chrome, like, good luck, like, Von Dutch is it. So we walk into the store. I happened to walk in while the head of North America was there, like, the whole division. And I just talked to him. I was like, you guys must be crushing it. Like, the store is beautiful. Like, how much you guys are doing online, if you don't mind me asking? And he gave me a number that absolutely shocked me in a bad way. And I was like, dude, there is no way that you guys are only making that online. And I was like, yeah, dude. And I'm like, we got to work out a deal. So they were doing so poorly that I was able to work out a gross revenue deal, which is really unorthodox. And it's probably my best business endeavor to date. And I'd worked out a deal where I just took a top of what I made. So, you know, if they made X amount every month, anything above X amount, I would take off the top. And by the time I left, they were doing 8 figures online. So I had a formula that I've patented. And I've rinsed and repeated the process in clothing a couple times now. And so I have a really, really good way on how to blow up clothing. And it's one of the things I'm looking forward to most in Pudgy, because that clothing brand will be massive. I promise you that.
That's a sick story. So you're saying that you basically gave them a flat rate and then anything above that you took?
Yeah, so I don't really like making – I'm not a guy that you can, like, pay a retainer or, like, any like that. Like, I like making money based on my performance. Like, right. I'm just – that's the type of dude I am.
Right.
And
right.
So I was – you know, it was basically something where, you know, if the company made $100,000, theoretically, I would take $10,000. and so that would be my fee for, you know, and if the company made $1 million, I would make – $100,000. And if the company made $10 million, I would make $1 million. And right. So, you know, it was totally based off of, you know, if you did, you know, if you were doing 50 grand a month, then, you know, on $1 million, on $10 million, I would make my percentage on 9,900,000. And I'm not a math whiz, so you get the point.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I get the point. Don't worry, we don't need any numbers in here. I'm a podcaster. It's so smart. I'm just trying to think here right now of the formula that you're using and working this system. I mean, it's pretty freaking genius. I love the salesperson perspective that you're coming at this stuff from. Like you're saying that you can only work off of essentially like a commission type or just something, a percentage where you're performance based, because it gives you an endless there's no end. There's no ceiling. You're not capped. You're not at a retainer where it's, you know, whatever it is, no matter how much they make, you make a still the same amount. You're leaving yourself open-ended for so much profit. How much do you feel like that strategy in all of your business has led to? Like, what kind of, do you feel like that 10x'd your revenue so far? Do you feel like that's 100x your revenue? How much do you think that's benefited you?
I would say at least 100x, right? It's like, it's completely like, it completely shifted the dynamic. I used to cut myself short and think that like, I just like repeatedly overperformed every time I did something. And I was like, yeah, this is, I'm not structuring this correctly. I'm not doing this the right way. So.
Freaking genius. It's absolutely game changing. I feel like that is such a salesperson mentality, and it makes so much sense given your background, and also just a hustler mentality, kind of, where it's like you want to get what you're putting in.
Yeah, it's like, if I don't like making other people rich at like my hard work and talent without reaping some of the benefits. Like, I'm fine with making you more rich than me, obviously, because you built the business. But if I'm gonna sit here and 360 your company, like, there's got to be something in it for me too. I'm not gonna neglect, you know, the capitalistic side of what it is to be a human being. You know, a lot of people, you know, might hate on capitalism, but capitalism breeds innovation. If there's no incentive for somebody to make money, then nobody's going to innovate and nobody's going to give it their all. At least in the societal framework that we live in now, in my perfect world, that doesn't exist. We all do things as one cohesive unit, but I'm not going to sit here and break the system, at least in the position that I'm in. Maybe I'll try to break the system when I have a greater voice and more power, but I'm also conscious of where I am in life. And, you know, little old me is not going to break, you know, a $1 trillion system where, you know, a group of people are making hundreds of billions of dollars. I've got to get into that group first and able to sway them out of it. So.
Well, that's that self-awareness that you were talking about. There it is. Consciousness.
Yeah.
Right there for us. Okay, so I want to go to, or actually I just want to ask you, in terms of the stuff that you've put out there educational wise on Shopify, on e-commerce, Facebook ads, I know you're really good at those, and just all the sort of online marketing and the way that you've taken clothing brands, do you have resources out there? Where can people find content that you've put out there, or get access to that, you know, that isn't necessarily directly through you? Because I know you have done stuff like that.
Yeah, they exist on the internet, and if you follow me, you can find them. It's not, again, it's one of those things that I've only created for the sake of, like, if you reached out to me, I'll put you in the direction. It's not something that I'm like, you know, poster boying and like, hey, go do this, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those places that, you know, if you're interested in, you know, just send me a direct message and I can point you in the right direction.
Okay, cool. I always fuck around and joke that people should create ebooks and shit, but you really should create a fucking ebook. You guys need to put an ebook out.
We plan on it.
Hell yeah. I love that. I love to hear that. You're such a wealth of knowledge in a space that a lot, in multiple spaces actually, that a lot of people want to learn about.
Yeah, I worked really hard, you know, learning this stuff. So definitely fortunate to be in a situation where I am definitely a multifaceted guy.
Speaking of multifaceted, I saw that you posted that if you could orbit space and that little thing that you would, I'm dying to go to space. And everybody's looks at me like I'm crazy when I talk about that. Do you genuinely, would you want to go to space? Are you interested in that?
Yeah. So there's an interesting, I have an interesting alignment with space, and it's something when I was a kid and there was a problem, I would always look up to the stars and I would get this feeling in my stomach that I was just so small and that like life is so much bigger than me. So whenever I feel down or I feel like life is just, you know, tackling me in all the wrong directions, I like to look to the sky and to the moon and to the stars if I can, and just feel that self of groundedness. And I remember when I was 8, I had landed, I forget where we had landed, but I remember looking at the sky and I felt that feeling. And ever since then, that feeling always resonates with me when I look to the sky. And, you know, when you look at life at a macro perspective, space is really the ultimate endeavor, right? And to be one of the first humans first couple thousand, 10,000, 100,000 humans to make it into the greater beyond would be a dream come true. And I feel really connected there. And it would be truly the biggest blessing if I was able to make it. And I hope one day I do. And I would totally take the opportunity, and it would really just be to bask in that glory of, like, what is the universe? Like, think about how many people there are on this planet and how small this planet is, and the vast magnitude of what it is to be the universe. When you, like, really look at it from a macro perspective, like, your problems and what you're dealing with are so minuscule to what the purpose of these worlds and this world is really about. And so I have, like, some, it's just something where, like, my heart skips a beat, dude. And when I, like, look at the sky, and it's like every time, it's almost like, you know, hitting a jewel or something. It's just like, dude, you get this feeling where it's just like, what a terrible analogy, but you know, it's like your heart skips a beat, you know. And I think there's something interesting there.
Oh, Jules, that's hilarious. I can't agree more. I'm sitting here nodding my head. I'm literally sitting here nodding my head as you're talking so vigorously too, at one point at the stop. But it hits me the same way. To think about the idea of possibly orbiting the Earth, seeing the Earth from outer space, seeing the little tiny freaking dots, not even seeing the dots because they're so small, not even seeing them. Because they're so far away, but knowing that there are literally miniature things on that planet, that's humans, that's usually me. Oh, seeing it from there, I get the chills. Do you ever watch the YouTube videos from outer space when they're doing the experiments, or they're just on the International Space Station and doing, like, all those weird things? Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I don't think there's a clip on YouTube of space that I haven't watched. I mean, I just, like, immerse myself in that stuff.
Oh, I love that. That makes me so happy. The ones where they're, like, cooking, those are hilarious. You know where they're, where, what was it, peanut butter and jelly, where she was trying to show how she spreads the peanut butter in space? And it's very difficult. Not an easy task.
Yeah, the issue with me is I get motion sick really easily, so that's going to be my caveat.
But do you think that you would feel that kind of motion? I don't know what anti-gravity would feel like. Would that be motiony?
I would assume so. And I would be extremely disappointed if I got to space and I was flying around and I was throwing up all the time. I'd be really upset.
But on the plus side, you would be able to literally grab your vomit in the air because it would be floating. So it'd be a lot easier to clean up.
Yeah, the downside is my vomit would cloud my view of the beautiful great beyond.
We'll have to come up with a system. I mean, I can imagine you would get seriously motion sickness going up, obviously, in the rocket. I don't know what those feel like. I'm assuming not great. But I don't know if you would get crazy motion sickness. I mean, you can try it. You can do the anti-gravity things. You should try that.
I will give it a shot. I plan on that for sure.
Okay, great. That's some good content for the Pudgy Media team. So please have somebody film that.
Amazing content, if I would say so myself.
Oh my God, do it in a penguin outfit. Do it in a penguin outfit. People skydive in those funny onesies. That'd be great. Okay, last sort of fun thing on you that I saw that was a hobby of yours is this Lego situation. Do you build Legos, or you just buy the kits as collectibles?
So my brother is a computer engineer. I have an older brother, and he's probably has one of the coolest Lego collections ever. And big Lego guy, grew up on Legos. And so I love them, not as much as he, but I get that from him. And so I'm a huge collector guy. Like, I love collecting stuff. Huge sports cards, you know, art, you know, sculptures and, you know, figurines. Like, I love to collect. Like, my mom calls me a hoarder. She says I hoard. I'm like, no, I don't. I collect.
You're like, this isn't hoarding. This is investing.
Exactly. That's exactly what I tell her. Verbatim.
Yeah, Legos are fun, especially if you have sort of an engineer's brain. Then it's it's a whole other ball game. They get so excited. I've got a couple cousins who are big engineers, and you bring out any sort of building type thing, even if you're just messing with the straws at the table, creating a little house or trying to balance them, they light up. They light up.
Oh, they get pretty awesome.
It's probably like you hearing that Von Dutch wasn't making enough money. You were like, what the fuck? That's crazy. Okay, I want to move to Drew. Drew, are you here? Are you with us? I want to ask you a couple questions. I'd love to give a little intro to you, to the audience, and touch base. I don't see an unmuting happening. Are you?
The unmuting. The unmuting has just happened.
There we go. There we go. It's happening. How are you doing?
Good. Baruch Hashem.
Oh, it's funny. First question that I wanted to ask you. So I know you're a Baal Tshuva. When did that happen?
It's been happening, but most intensively over the last 2 years. I spent this past summer in yeshiva in Jerusalem studying at Mayanot, and I study every day. I get up very early in the morning, several hours a day, and I study Tanakh, Tanya, Hitas. Wow. So it's changed my life.
Do you do Talmud at all?
I do Talmud, yep. Every day I do Shulchan Aruch.
Oh, yes. Nice. Is that Daf Yomi?
Daf Yomi is part of it. So I do Hayom Yom, Daf Yomi, Halacha. I do daily Rashi, Rambam, yep, Sota. It's all part of it.
That's cool. That's really cool. I saw that in your bio and I got really excited. My mom and my sister and my brother, they live in Sfat. I work for the Jewish Journal, so a huge part of my life. Do you two bond then, you and Luca? Do you guys bond over religion and your newfound sort of connection?
Yeah, like in ridiculously. A lot of what Luca talks about is, you know, it's in the Old Testament, and kindness, chesed, and betul, self-nullification, and emunah, faith, and trust, and a lot of the things that he talks about resonate with me. I'm a little bit older than Luca, but we definitely have a very strong bond around spirituality and the universal nature and doing mitzvot and the importance of when you do good, it comes back to you, and not really thinking about like what is the quid pro quo of doing good, but just doing good because it's the right thing to do. So yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we just completely bond and we have a lot of conversations around it, which is always really productive because we're on the same wavelength. Makes it really a lot more fun when the core values are aligned. So we're really blessed that we do connect really deeply on that level.
Yeah, it must be so nice to do business with someone who you feel like has a ton of integrity.
Well, I think that's really what it comes down to. And when Luca and I were introduced to one another, you know, a while back, it was really a discussion around core values. You know, when we had discussed the potentiality of the acquisition, you know, you kind of talk in terms of, okay, that's a transaction, but really for Luca and I, it's a relationship. And we talked a lot about who he is and where he comes from. And I shared my background and we were very transparent. And I knew immediately that if the deal was to come through, that I wanted to have some role in it because I wanted to be in Luca's life and I wanted him to be in my life. And, you know, we're both big kids at heart as well. I love to play with toys. I have a 9-year-old son and a 21-year-old, and we love to play with our gel blasters and go and shoot hoops. My 9-year-old collects Pokemon cards. And with his buddy Joseph, they put on videos and they're YouTube experts. They're shooting all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, it's the energy of youth that transcends whether you're chronologically or, you know, kind of 7 or 8 or 10 years old biologically, or you're a bit older, but just have this big open mind and big, you know, never grow up kind of thing. So definitely, that's a huge part of the Pudgy culture and a huge part of this business and this brand.
That's great. It's great to hear the sort of strength of connection that you guys have and how it's rooted in the core values. I think that's important in a team, you know, and it's important in human, obviously, just in everyday life, but very important to hear from NFT teams, especially when we're confronted with so many, so much uncertainty, so many different rug pulls, so much like of this stuff left in the air. And obviously with the history with Pudgy, I think that it's really great that you guys are coming in and you're so strong about your core values and you're advocating for them and you're bringing it into the Pudgy culture. And it really is helping, I feel like, the confidence of the project and the confidence of the community, which is so crucial and essential when you're leading the charge in these spaces. So that's pretty awesome to hear. And it's proof when you see how strong the community is online, you know, even just on Twitter. Luca, do you want to chime in on this? What's it like for you coming in from the other end when you met Drew?
Yeah, I think it was just one of those unique moments where this whole process has been, it's almost, it sounds like corny, but it's like almost like God or the universe like wants this to happen. It's like too perfect of a situation where it's like there's a higher power here playing a role. And I put full faith and trust in whatever that higher power is, that it's just like, you know, it's very hard to construct a team in general, but the fact that all of us are so aligned in this regard is just like beautiful, because it's, you know, there's a greater purpose here than just building a successful company. It's how can you help people and how can you make an impact? And we all live and breathe that. So, you know, when I met Drew, it was just one of those situations. It was an instant click. It didn't take very long. And kind of to Drew's point, is just like the synergies are like unmatched. And I've been a part of a lot of companies and a lot of cultures, and this is one that I'm super excited. And it's like two things too. The Gel Blaster situation is almost similar. It's like how the universe is just, you know, you manifesting is an interesting thing. And it's just like you're attracting this energy that you like, that you put out. Like you put out X amount of energy, and whatever that energy is, like you'll receive that same type of energy. And so there's something bigger at play here. And I'm just grateful to be an operator in this amazing opportunity.
Sounds like you guys have such a good culture over there. Makes such a difference in an office. I'm sure the Igloo is a great place to be. I feel like it would be a fantastic ambiance.
It's a great place to be.
I hope it's not too chilly though. Is it one of those places where everybody keeps the AC on at like 65 degrees?
I mean, 68 degrees is where this penguin feels comfortable.
Okay, so I'm cool with that.
I grew up and we didn't have air conditioning. I live in Los Angeles, and I was it was the most miserable experience. Like it really was the kicker, and I really feel bad for anybody without air conditioning. Trust me, I've been there, I've done that, and that was like the one thing I would like fight. I'd be like, just mom, like we need a place with central air conditioning. And so ever since I like became had an ounce of success. 68 degrees, and there's no fighting me on it.
It is temperature control or get the fuck out.
Yeah.
These are the options. Wait, if you guys did an Igloo at Coachella, then I'm assuming it would have been temperature controlled, right? Is this what was the theme?
It had dry ice and the smoke. I don't know how much you could temperature control it. I would assume it's actually a great insight, because I didn't think that far, and I wasn't really in charge of the creation of the Igloo. But now that you've mentioned it, it's imperative that Igloo is temperature controlled.
Okay, right. If you did that at a festival, do you know how many people you would get coming into there? And just like, obviously because of the temperature control, but obviously, you know, the project and the fun stuff. But think about that. It's boiling at Coachella. People will want a place to cool off, to sit down, have themselves a nice little dry ice drink.
Yeah, and talking about universal alignment, we wanted to do that activation, and unfortunately it didn't happen. But when I had went the weekend that we were supposed to do it, there was a huge sandstorm. So again, it was like God or the universe saying like, hey, like if we would have done that Igloo, it would have been a huge miss, because there was a sandstorm that like made it quite literally miserable to be outside.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too fun. That, I mean, it, you know, it can be, but nah. Oh, is that why? Did you go weekend one? Because everybody that came back from weekend one had legitimate rasp voice. It sounded like they smoked cigarettes for 30 years when they got back. And they all said dust.
Yeah, I went weekend one. I drove down there. I was there for 4 or 5 hours. And I immediately left. I said, nope, I've got more important things to do.
I'm really glad that we didn't drive out then, because we were close to going out on the third day. But then we had our Nocella here. But yeah, it's so funny. I even, you know, Isabella Addison, she was just on my podcast, and there was like a lot of YouTube comments about how her voice has changed since she was on ZHC. And I was just like, guys, this is just Coachella recovery voice.
Yeah, this Coachella was a huge miss. They were trying to make up for all the money that they lost in the last 2 years. And it was just an absolute disaster. So nobody missed out on anything on this one.
Great. So you hear that, guys? Be no FOMO, although I wasn't really even FOMO before. Okay, back to Drew. I want to ask you another question, because I know not only do you guys have, obviously, the religion thing in common, but you also worked. You worked for Guess Jeans and Steve Madden, so you have that clothing and apparel connection. How much of that played a factor within you wanting to work with Luca or just within the project?
So I also, I don't know if you know, Melissa and Doug Children's Toys. I was chief marketing, chief digital officer of that company.
Yeah, I saw that as well. Yeah.
So, you know, it obviously I have the background in footwear, fashion. I'm as president of Swagtron Hoverboards. So we're talking about hoverboards and skateboards. So, but it really, you know, it was so.
Oh, that so wasn't, a lot of the contact as in with you, between you guys and your interest in business as well.
It really, you know, I was interested in Luca and Pudgy Penguins, and it really, you know, the business experience was kind of secondary. I mean, I knew that the business experience, the contacts would be meaningful, you know, from a tactical perspective, supply chain, relationships, financial planning, things of that nature. I understood that licensing, but really what it came down to was, it was about Luca and his vision and how I could be part of that with my experience. But I knew what I had done. I knew what we could do, but I felt like doing it together, it would, the sum of the parts would just be exponentially greater than the whole. But yeah, the experience doesn't hurt, and having those contacts and, you know, global brand experience, knowing who to call, one phone call to get the right lawyers if we need them, to get the right financial support, bookkeepers, accountants, whatever we need. But it's just a fit. Like, it's a complimentary experience. So yeah, I guess I didn't think about it that much. I just was more focused on the power of the Penguins and that Luca was the right guy to lead this thing, and I wanted to be there to be his partner.
Who's the family that owns Guest? Marciano, right?
Yeah, the Marcianos.
Do you know someone named Kelly Malka? She's one of the daughters. She's an artist.
I don't know her personally, but Guest has 16,000 employees, so you know, I knew Maurice, Paul. I work with them. You know, a whole bunch of the senior level people. And my division was the digital division. Mm. And I oversaw all of customer service and global strategy for e-commerce and innovation and transformation for the company. It's very possible I might've run across these people, but you know, it was so many people that we interact with on a daily basis. But I certainly will double check to see. I'll look her up on LinkedIn and see if I recognize the face.
Yeah, no, I don't think she didn't work there. She's one of the like kids, one of the family. She went to my school and we were in middle school, but she's a pretty big artist now. Does a lot of graphics and really cool sketching and stuff like that. And I was just wondering if she had maybe gone into the NFT space. It was a long shot, but she's also Jewish. I thought, you know, 3 degrees separate.
In Judaism, it's like one.
Yes.
Only 13.5 million of us, and I think 3 million of us in the LA area. So, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm in Beverlywood. If you sneeze outside, you'll sneeze on a Jew here. Like,
oh, you're in Beverlywood?
Wow. Yeah, I'm in Beverlywood. Are you in Beverlywood?
Oh, no. I used to be in Bel Air. So, you know, right by Stephen Weiss.
Yeah, of course.
And UJA.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So funny, right as I'm talking about Jews, my dad calls me and he's like, you know, just Mr. Jew. So what a perfect timing thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like he can hear it. I mean, I live at home with him, so he actually might be able to hear.
Divinely inspired.
Love it. I love it. Okay, Dr. Kaizu, we got to get a little something from you. Women in Web 3. I'd love to hear your thoughts on just the culture of Pudgy and what sort of drew you to the project.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. I'm Kaizu. I'm the COO of Pudgy Penguins. The first question was what got me in Web 3? Is that
Just what attracted you to the project?
What attracted me to the project? That is a great question. I've been NFT DJing for the past year. So when Pudgy Penguins first launched, I was very, very excited about it. I love the aesthetics. I love the artwork. And that's really what drew me initially to Pudgy Penguins. You know, they're cute. How could you go wrong with it? So I've known Luca for about 3 to 5 years, not really sure. But previously I launched a number of other, successful NFT projects. And when he approached me about Pudgy Penguins, I was like, absolutely, I would love to. And so I've worked on the organization aspect of, the other projects I was with. And so I knew I could be of service to this, and I'm very excited, to be a part of Pudgy Penguins, and also, you know, pave the way for women in Web 3, because that is also one of my big initiatives and one of my big passions.
So I feel like you would be a good person to answer this question then. Sorry, can you just mute all? Yeah, yeah, unmute right after. There's some weird background, but you'd be a great person to answer this question, because I feel like so many people, when they're looking at projects to invest in and they're seeing, you know, one ETH, 1.5 ETH, whatever it's going to cost them to get into a project, there is obviously hesitation there for people who don't necessarily have a large amount of funds. And they're thinking, I'd rather spread my ETH across a few different projects instead of putting it all into one. So I obviously not all into one, but as in putting it into a higher value one. And so I'd love if you could maybe give the case for why you feel like, from your perspective as the COO and what you've seen within the team, why you feel like this is a great investment for people to make, and why it would be something that is going to have longevity for them when they do make that investment.
That's a great question. And actually, that's a question I asked myself when I first entered into the Web3 space. And honestly, it's probably a question most people ask themselves too, the first time they're involved in it. I think a lot of it, you have to bet on the team. You know, the artwork is the first start, but after that, after, you know, you mint out and you launch, it's truly the team that carries the project either to success or failure, whatever it may be. And I feel like the projects that have a stacked team, that are well-versed in the space, that are diversified, that are open-minded and willing to adapt to how fast the space moves, are the ones that succeed. And so from the perspective of what do you do if you're in a position of investing in a project, if you don't have a lot of ETH on you, I would make sure you're doing your own research. Make sure you're spending time in the community and understanding the team behind the project and seeing who stands behind the team, their histories, their backgrounds, as well as other people that are advocating for that team. If they have a history, not only in the Web3 space, but in real life, and it's a good history, that's a very good indication that they know how to run a business and will run a successful project, no matter what we have to face with cultural changes or, you know, changes with law, whatever it may be. You know, those people are resilient, they're adaptable, and they know how to put the proper people in the proper positions in order to make a business or a brand thrive. So that would be my advice.
Great answer. Wow. That was a great answer.
You know, to that point, you know, there's going to be an interesting moment where, like, this is a volatile market, and it may be, you know, this may or may not happen, but there's a chance, and to say that there isn't a chance, like, what if Ethereum goes to $800, right, or $500? Like, who's going to be able to stand the test of time? A lot of these guys are just banking on royalties and, you know, the whole Web3 side in the market to take them where they need to be. But, like, that's not going to stand the test of time. And I've already seen it twice in this space now, not specifically NFTs, but if Ethereum goes down, I'm safe to assume that everything else will go down if it took a parabolic shift to the downside. And so, like, having people that are capable of building something that can sustain itself just beyond the Web3 side, right, it's going to be really important, because if that market does take that negative shift, like, a lot of people are going to be wiped out. No fault to them, but they're just banking on, you know, something they can't control. And that's going to be a really interesting moment if that moment does come. Now, things have changed. It's not the same market dynamic that it was in 2014, 2017. Things have definitely changed. But, you know, to say that the possibility of that happening doesn't exist is to be negligent of your surroundings. And so it's important to us that we build a business that is profitable without royalties, so that, you know, one, that the business grows, but two, that you can survive, you know, any potential winters that may come, because the people that are going to win and the people that are going to lose when that comes is going to be who knows how to operate a real company, right? It's not going to be the whole Web3 and shifting the perspective and, you know, doing the typical, you know, Web3 bag pump-esque catalysts won't be applicable if that market takes the turn for the worst, which I'm not hoping for, nor do I want that to happen. But to say that that's not capable of happening is to not be in the space and not understand what this entails. And so, you know, for us, it's important to have something that sustains itself way beyond the royalties, because banking on that is going to be a very hard game for people when and if that time comes.
The combination of both of your answers is so fantastic and really complement each other, and it shows in the synergy of your team. I loved what you said, doctor. I think that, are you an actual doctor, or is that just your...
Yeah, okay,
great. Because I never know, like, if I'm calling someone doctor and it's just, you know, there's I guess their slang name. No, their nickname. No, wow, it's late. Slang name. Guys, it is only 7:30 p.m. and I am slang naming already on this stage. Their nickname, it's just hilarious. But you're an actual doctor, so I feel like I'm really speaking to a doctor here. But yeah, I love what you said about the teams and having that confidence in the teams and the people who are working on the project. And that's always something that I look into. I really like looking into who's actually running the project, who's actually working on it, and seeing if they have specific characteristics about themselves. Like, are they the type to hold themselves accountable? Are they the type to care if something goes wrong, to care if there's a problem, if it's going to affect the community, if it's going to affect something? Are they going to do their due diligence to fix any of the issues? You know, these projects are never perfect. There's always going to be issues. It's a matter of how they roll with the punches, how they're improving it. That's the kind of stuff I look for. So I really liked your answer. And then to tie it in even to what Luca said much earlier about consciousness, that's also something I'm looking for in these teams. And I think, Luca, your answer speaks true to the self-awareness that we need to have as well as investors and as people who are getting involved with these NFT projects, to be able to say, look, the market is never going to always be perfect, right? That's just not, it's an impossibility. It's never going to be perfect. And so you do want to find people, and you do want to find a team who understands how to run a business regardless of Web3, whose model does not just rely on the standard NFT ecosystem, essentially, and that's going to have diversity to their utility and diversity to what they're offering and diversity to how they're generating revenue and how they're, you know, they're building up their team. So I like what you said. I think it goes hand in hand with what the doctor said. And I think that those were both fantastic answers for people who are just looking to get into the space as well, or who are just looking to kind of be able to evaluate and to sift through some of the nonsense, I guess, that's in this space. I don't know about you guys, but pretty sure I can. I would put money, actually, and I 100% put money down right now that all of us collectively in this space have, like, give or take 8 billion DMs from 8,000 trillion different projects saying, hey, this is the next big project in the NFT space. Let's get involved. And you know what? We have to sift through all that shit. So everybody should really take to heart what was just said here. And lucky for you, it's recorded. So if you spaced out and slang names like me, then you'll be able to re-listen back. I do want to end off the room, though. It's getting late where Luca is. It's getting late for all of us. And we do need to be up at a certain time tomorrow to rise and grind. But I want to open the floor quickly. If there's any more questions from people in the audience, members of the Pudgy community, as well as the three beautiful speakers who are on stage right now, if you have any final words before we close the room, you can say those now while we wait to see if people request and come up. Luca, Drew, Doctor.
Final words?
Yes, give us some final words.
Where do I start? again, thank you. Tov toda. Thank you very much for having us. And I think what you'll find above all else is we're approachable, we're accessible, we're a community. So we're a community that's part of community. And I think you're going to see amazing things from, I know you're going to see amazing things from Pudgy Penguins, and you've heard from the doctor and from Luca, and it's their energy, which, you know, I'm just basking in their energy because it makes my job so much easier to put the structure in place and set us up for growth and scalability and to support the vision that they have. So thank you very much for the opportunity to share those thoughts. And I'll kind of leave you with, if you can dream it, you can do it. So, you know, the thing that I see most people struggle with is they get in their own way. They complicate simplicity, and we're really in the business of simplification of complexity. And if you keep that in mind, you'll go very far. So simplify complexity, don't complicate simplicity. I'll leave with that.
I love that. And I just kind of want to reiterate on that point. You know, first and foremost, thank you for having us on here. I thought, you know, you doing your research and diving through the socials was really interesting, and I loved it. And so thank you for the thoughtful conversation, because that's exactly what this was. So I appreciate your time. Thank you for having us, and you're welcome in the huddle whenever you choose.
Oh. Yes, thank you, Shani. And I just want to applaud you for what you're also doing in the space, for just bringing awareness, also being a woman in the space. I think it's fantastic that you have your own podcast, and it really helps break down the barrier for, you know, other women who are intimidated. It can kind of be like a space where it's solely just men, and a lot of women feel lost. And so I love what you're doing, and I know what you do and are going to do in the future is going to impact this space in such a positive way. So I applaud you for everything that you're doing.
Thank you. Wow. What a great ego boost for me to end this room off on. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. You know, Luca, your story is so fantastic, and there's so much awesome info out there. Next time you're in LA, for sure, we'll get you on the pod as well. I'd love to have you on in person. We can do it on camera.
Thank you. And I will totally hop on the pod when I am there. So yeah. I look forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And courtside next season, Laker game. I mean, like, we just have to, it has to happen, you know?
Drew told me that he would pay for it, so I'm looking forward to
fantastic.
It. You're done.
Done and done. Absolutely.
Great. Drew, you should know that actually as a child, I took quite a few people to Laker games for their first times, and so now you would really be, this would be like paying it forward in the other direction. This is great. Thank you so much.
It would be my absolute pleasure, and as Luca and Dr. K can tell you, if I say it will happen, it will happen. So yes, you have my word. Be a pleasure. I'll even pay for parking, and I will even pay for refreshments.
Amazing. This is going to be a great time. Oh, hopefully the season is better next year. Let's all pray to whatever God you believe in, to anybody, that the Lakers do something better. Oh my God. All right. We won't get into a sad topic before we end. I want to remind everybody in the room that the Pudgy Penguins does have a really cool Spotify playlist that they've been working on. Right. I'd love to direct people there. I think that's a really cool feature that you guys are putting out there. Where can they find that? Anybody?
So the podcast is called What is Love, and it's on The playlist is called What is Love, and it's on Spotify, and it's initially was a Luka Nets curated playlist, but over the last couple of weeks, we've been adding community requests. So it's a little bit of the oldie vibes, but I think it comes into, it fits into who we are as a company. And I think I definitely put some thought into it. I didn't just put it together. So
that's great. That's great. Music makes the soul go round. One last idea I have for you guys before we do end off, I'll be playing the Penguin song again to close out the room. So if you guys want to stick around and listen to that, you should. But my last idea, since the project is Pudgy Penguin, I think that all of your IRL events should have an obscene amount of food options. Just to, you know, line up with the theme, as well as perfect temperature controlled environments. I believe that if we have both of those features, I will be at every single event, whether or not I'm invited. So, woohoo! All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
Thank you so much.
If you want to find penguins, down you go to the bottom of the earth at the South Pole. Antarctica is the place where you find the most penguins taking up space. Penguins have wings, but they cannot fly. They like to swim and sometimes slide. The most classic thing that they like to model is the way they do their penguin waddle. Moving my flippers up and down. Look at me.
It's such a bop. Oh.
An aquatic bird who just can't fly. You won't find me up in the sky. A penguin fact you don't want to miss. These birds lay eggs, they're oviparous. The egg stays warm on daddy's feet while the mommy swims and finds food to eat. The daddies huddle together to stay warm. They gotta stay close until the babies are born. The egg stays cozy with a pouch of skin. Keeping it warm, that's incubation. Moving my flippers up and down. Look at me, I'm a penguin now. An aquatic bird who just can't fly. You won't find me up in the sky. When it comes to food, penguins get their fill. They like to eat fish, they like to eat krill. But the baby needs the mommy to go into the ocean to find some food below. She brings it back to feed the chick. Now check out this other disgusting trick. The strangest of all food presentations. She can feed her chick through regurgitation. Moving my flippers up and down. Look at me, I'm a penguin now. An aquatic bird who just can't fly. You won't find me up in the sky. Who is the biggest?